From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Got all three of us back this week. Say hi, John.
Hello. A rare occurrence, all three of us.
Yeah, it's been that way lately, isn't it? My man, Hunter. What's going on, Hunter?
Howdy.
All right.
And, trying to keep the cowboy theme up. Howdy, y'all.
That's a Texas.
All right.
It reminded me of going to that mint up in Dallas, in Fort Worth, sorry, when I went there with Rick. You know, the pressing, where they print all the money.
Oh, really? I've never been there.
I mean, it's not a bad day out. We went out there, and they had this announcement over the loudspeaker when you're walking there, and it says, howdy, y'all. And it says something about, this building has a prohibition of knives and guns and weapons. I thought, is this for real? Who would take a knife or a gun into this place?
Well, I would suspect an Australian first and foremost. You know, especially with the knife, you know.
Yeah, we've seen that movie.
We know.
Oh, is it any good? I've sort of blocked out of my memory for the last 30 years.
No, that's not a knife. This is a knife, eh?
It's the butter knife.
For a Tarzan in New York remake, it's pretty fun.
It is Tarzan in New York.
That's all it is.
John always knows, like, it's so funny. Whenever you bring up a movie, John knows exactly the movie it's ripping off. John will go like, oh, it's just a remake of this. And you go, holy shit, he's right.
So Paul Hogan is Ron Eli, is he? A modern day Ron Eli.
Not Ron Eli, Johnny Weissmuller, who I'm related
to. Yeah, it was Weissmuller. Oh, it had like the Tarzan going to court, wearing like a suit, and cheetahs in court with him. And like, it has a sniveling lawyer with the twirling mustache going, yeah, you're an ape man, you know, living in the jungle. Tarzan no follow law, you know.
I actually want to see this now. I don't even like Tarzan movies.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. You gotta see Tarzan Triumphs.
Yeah, Tarzan Triumphs. John turned me on to that one. And now Tarzan Make War is...
That's like the greatest movie ever made. I could watch it endlessly.
Cheetah mowing down zombies. Not zombies, Nazis.
Nazis!
Why did I say zombies? What the fuck?
I don't know.
I think it's because Nazi zombie movies are so prevalent.
God.
No hand zombie hand movies are everywhere.
Yeah. And speaking of zombies, we're going to answer some questions from our listeners this week.
Yeah.
Going to go to a mailbag.
Yeah, we're just... This was the most impromptu mailbag show. Like, I do the Thug Questions show for the Film Thugs. And it's like, they have a separate email account. They just let it build up. And every, like, you know, 6 to 12 months... they'll have me open it up, and I'll just record some of the questions, and they blindly answer them. But for us, we're just like, all right, we're recording a mailbag show tomorrow.
Get 24 hours to ask your questions.
Yeah, just like,
I got a question for the Film Thugs. All right, can you pose this to them next time? Why is every episode of yours called Our Favorite Trailers? Our favorite leading males? Our favorite this? Top 10 sports movies?
Because they try to keep it positive. Actually,
yeah,
I like the Film
Thugs. Not everybody's cynical like us, you know.
I like the Thugs best when they're drunk and talking about stuff they hate. That's when the show's amazing.
Oh, that's the Trailers We Hate show, is it?
I don't know. The first show I heard of theirs was Movies We Hate. And they recorded three shows in a day. And they did like Movies We Love, something else, and Movies We Hate. And you can tell they're pretty deep in the pain with the booze by that point.
Yeah, I know. I remember hearing it from when they first dropped. Yeah, I was on one of their first bloody episodes. Remember with the Oscar
one? Yeah, you
were.
Like I that's where I think that's around when we first hooked up, Stu, because you were on their show ranting about stuff. Like that should have been a regular bit on the show, like Week in Rage with Adam Carolla on Kevin and Bean. It could have been like something like that with you.
I couldn't be. It needed to be a one time a year only at one with the Oscars. And that was the last one I ever watched. I thought that's it.
Yeah,
never.
No, you were going off on the Oscars, but I just remember hearing that show, and I thought they sounded so scary because they'd be like, if you like this movie, then fuck you!
I remember, I think I did a piece when they did their 100th episode. They asked us all to, like, all of us to do a piece, and I did one. I was so gone. I don't remember what it was about. They gave me about 10 movies to see what I thought of them. I think I'd only seen about 5. I'm like, I hadn't seen stuff like, oh, what was it? What's that one with Frank Sinatra? The popular one, you know, with Olivia. No. What's it fucking called?
Manchurian Candidate.
No. He's not the lead in it. It's Montgomery Clift. It's one of the most popular films ever. I still haven't seen it.
John?
Montgomery Clift and Laurence Olivier?
No, Frank Sinatra. I said.
Oh, Sinatra and Montgomery Clift.
Yeah.
Why don't I?
That one of the most fucking popular. Picture where they're on the beach in the.
Like, From Here to Eternity.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
They asked me to talk about that. I hadn't seen it. All I remember doing was just like slurring my words and just I scored the whole thing with music by Rat. I thought, I'm just going to put a whole bunch of Rat music over the top of it.
I need to go back and listen to that.
Yeah. I think it was on the 100th episode, either part
I'm
one.
I'm pretty sure I've heard it and I just forgot about it.
I don't think I even heard it. I just here you go. I just scored it with like Rat music and that was it. Got to do something.
Round and round. Stuart's drunk again.
I was actually drunk on the Heathens episode. If you could
you
tell.
You Rob drinking? No.
Yeah, the hell you say, right?
I'm sure it's not obvious at all.
Well, I couldn't even say co-host. I said co-host.
Was it like when I tried to sign out on the Star Wars episode?
Oof, no, not as bad as that. We were only on. Well,
I think
thing
that
was
that's like the low point.
I think that's the worst of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, get a little bit of a tip or a little bit of a heads up for the listeners. When we did the actual. Remember recasting Star Wars? How we said we'd recast it, and
yeah,
and you said, "Oh, yeah, of course, mine's the best because I'm awesome." That's how trashed you are. I need to get that bit and actually stick it up on SoundCloud for the people to hear. It was. I think that's the biggest editing nightmare I've ever done. That was.
Oh yeah,
insane.
It was horrible. That episode was an embarrassment because of me. You know.
And that was the one where we tried to go curse-free, which is it's the only episode I think we've done curse-free. Remember we said deliberately no cursing on that one when we had Cole on?
Yeah.
And there wasn't literally no cursing, but...
I don't, you know.
I don't think there was cursing on the Count Dante episode.
No, maybe not. Yeah, but that was only by chance. This was deliberately we said
right.
No cursing.
We said we're going to try to go, like, family-friendly, y'all, and then I'm just, like, over there...
What were you on that day? Was it whiskey you were on that day?
I was drinking whiskey, and I just didn't expect the show to be 4 fucking hours.
Oh my god!
I've got the raw
audio of that, and that is 5 hours and 15 minutes is the full length time.
I mean, I was just you know, and I'm drinking whiskey and Coke or whatever it was.
Yeah,
and I just did not. Realize I don't normally drink that, and I did not realize how hammered I was getting.
Yeah,
and the next day, I remember it was one of those days where you feel like shit all day, not because you're hungover, that's part of it, but because you're like, oh, I made an ass of myself last night. You know?
That's when we're first starting out, though, and just really trying hard to be nice. I mean, have you ever heard any early episodes of ours, like lately? I can't do it.
I haven't listened to any of our old stuff in a long time. If I listen to older episodes, I usually listen to ones that I'm not on, or if we had an interesting guest, I'll go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
Or if I'm like, oh, that was a good episode, and I kind of forgot about it, I'll go back and listen. But I haven't listened to any pre-John shows in a long time.
Yeah, me too. John was a galvanizing bit for the show. Yeah, I mean, I think I listened to a part of episode 0, I'm like, I don't even know these two people. I really don't know these two people. Who are they?
Oh, John actually did listen to... he listened to our Halloween commentary.
Yeah,
and
I did.
And the only thing he said was, you guys sound like a couple of metalheads.
Yeah,
And I said, yeah, that sounds about accurate.
Yep.
I want John to hear the Shaw Brothers one we did, which is way back on episode.
Oh, I'm sure John would like.
He'd just be laughing, going, you don't know shit, you two, seriously. Or Stuart, you don't know shit anyway. Yeah, all right, so anyway, mailbag. We're going to, we got given a bunch of questions. By the way, we got about 1,963 questions from Garrow.
Yeah.
1,962 of them just cannot be repeated on the air.
Okay.
But all of them, you could tell he listens to the show.
Yeah.
No, of course.
He's not just a guy who comes on every now and then, you know.
Yeah. All right, so anyway, let's go first into Mr. Avery Frawley. Hey, Avery.
All right.
All right. Okay, here we go. What do you three think is responsible for the decline in the horror genre of this past decade? Fangoria catering to teenage girls who haven't the slightest idea what horror is. Horror fans creating a culture so riddled with narcissism as to make horror something that no one will want to be a part of, or something else entirely. Okay, and he goes on to say, personally, I think that's the fact that everything, with a few exceptions, coming out these days are examples of the snake eating its tail, in the sense that there's seldom an original idea in horror cinema. Horror these days is derivative of others' work. Case in point, remakes. Why struggle to come up with something new when you can rehash the same old shit? All right. I think you pretty much answered it for us. But
well, and
what do
here's
you guys
the
think?
Thing is, John and I discussed this on the last episode.
Right.
I talked about how, you know, with the previous generation of horror filmmakers, like John Carpenter's generation, they grew up watching, like, Universal monster movies, but they didn't emulate those movies. They didn't try to just do those movies again.
Yeah.
And today, you have these horror filmmakers who grew up watching horror movies, and they just seem to be doing the same movies. Like, I saw the trailer for Eli Roth's Green Inferno, which has... the release date has been postponed indefinitely. I hope that means forever.
Yeah.
But I mean, you see these horror filmmakers who are just, if they're not remaking stuff, they're doing the same types of movies. And it's almost like they haven't taken these ideas and done something new with them the way previous generations have. They're just trying to show you how smart they are.
Yeah.
Like, they're referencing other horror movies. They're all going like, oh, look at how many movies we've seen, you know. These aren't filmmakers who are trying to make their own movies. They're trying to reference other movies.
Right.
Isn't that kind of the gist of what we talked about last time, John?
Pretty much, and I've also had that complaint that horror movies of the last couple of decades are shot like action movies.
Yeah.
They're not filmed like horror films at all.
Like, because, like... a filmmaker who has that problem is James Wan.
Yeah.
Like, he'll make a movie and...
Hey, you leave off my Melbourne lad.
No. Here's the thing. Yeah. I think James Wan's way better than most horror directors.
Mm.
But the thing is, with some of his movies, you'll be watching it like Insidious.
Yeah.
I'm watching it and I'm going, okay, this is really good. You know, like, this is creepy. It's freaking me out. I like it.
Yeah.
And it's the same with The Conjuring. It's kind of the same with Dead Silence. You're watching it, and it's building, but it's like he keeps the momentum going. He doesn't find that sweet spot.
Yeah.
And then by the end, it's like an action movie. And a lot of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies have this problem.
Yeah. Right.
And the one movie I've seen lately that did not have that problem, and I've said this before on the show, Scott Derrickson's Sinister. It builds momentum, but it finds that sweet spot and stays in there. Stays right in that wheelhouse, and it finds that good spot with Dread and, you know, Fear, and just like kind of locks you in there, and I liked that about it, you know. But some movies they kind of build and build and build until they're building into another genre.
right, and as I've said, that antisocial filmmaking tends to draw antisocial fans.
Yes.
So that's why you've seen this kind of build up of rather obnoxious horror fandom that's very insanely consumed with itself, and you're kind of getting it from that's a lot of what I think Avery is seeing out there as well.
Yeah. I mean, and I can think of a few people, but that just sort of exemplify this sort of circle jerk element of horror fandom. And you know, we're not shitting on our friends at, you know, Land of the Creeps.
No, that's what I was going to bring up. Yeah, because they're different, because they're horror fans from way back.
Well, and they watch a wide variety of stuff.
They do, but they also say, they like Greg and Sean are very critical, saying, you know, this film sucks ass, it's no good. They won't sit there and accept what's been given to them.
Right.
Because they've already got a benchmark of films that they've watched from the 80s.
The only thing, it's enough that we can forgive them for being Rob Zombie fans.
If anything, at least they'll analyze and break down what they like and don't like about a movie.
Yes.
They don't get into that knee-jerk fandom, this sucks or this rules.
Yeah. So,
which is kind of the more tiresome thing about horror fandom out
Not
there.
Enough titties, man.
That's Sean.
Boobies.
That's right. My problem with horror films these days is lack of shot composition by the filmmakers. They got no idea. Every filmmaker these days wants to be bloody John Carpenter just by filming everything in scope. And we brought it up when we reviewed Lords of Salem. It was just, why do you need to shoot in scope? It doesn't make you Carpenter. It doesn't make you an auteur.
I thought Zombie was trying to be like a mix of Kubrick and Polanski, and it just, you know, fell on its face. You know?
But I don't think those guys ever shot in scope anyway. Kubrick, apart from 2001, never shot in scope. Oh, sorry, and Spartacus, I think, was the other one.
Right.
But every other time, he was like the British standard of 166, which is his preferred one.
Right.
I think Polanski was only just always a, you know, the American Academy standard of 185.
I guess I'm thinking of the design and the way the look of the film. I guess
I know you're saying. I'm talking strictly about the lens,
right?
The
aspect ratio.
Yeah. Why do they need to shoot in scope? I mean, I will analyze films like that, and in particular horror films, and I think you shot this too wide because you want to fill up the whole damn theater screen, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not conducive to the story. Another massive problem I've got with horror films is the sound design. Everything needs to be bloody loud. Everything just needs to be so loud. Why?
Well, that's the thing with a lot of horror movies. They go for the cheap...
the cheap sting, yeah.
The boo scares, you know, the sting, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you have a film like Halloween.
Also, the music score is telegraphed, too. Last few I've watched, I could just tell by the music, the way the music's going, where it's...
Yeah.
It's telegraphing things 5 minutes ahead of time. Just by the rhythm and beats. It's just like, because I've seen too many of these damn things.
Yeah. But for instance,
there's not much new out there.
Perfect example is I've got the original John Carpenter Halloween. I've got it in mono on a DVD, and I've also got it in a 5.1 on the Blu-ray I've got. The mono is far more frightening.
Sure.
It really is. And that's a mono. That's a one-track mono. But because what it is now, they've got this disposal of 5.1, 7.1 at their feet to use. They have to use every damn speaker to try and scare you, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, it totally changes the way the life of the film with the way they just totally reconstruct the sound. You know, it's kind of a problem with home video releases.
Well, that's the thing that you and I spoke about, Hunter, when we were talking about the French Connection. Remember back on Twitter a little while back saying about why do films that are old need to have newly boosted 5.1 soundtrack?
They don't.
They don't. French Connection, as we were saying, in one channel mono was perfect as it was. It was fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Same with Psycho. Doesn't need a 5.1. You know, it's fine as it was. It survived 50 plus years as it was in mono. What's a newly mixed 5.1 going to do for it? Nothing.
No, it's just so people can go, oh, look, I'm getting my money's worth with my sound design, you know.
That's right, yeah. A newly mixed 5.1 soundtrack actually puts me off an old film.
No, and you know, if you want to include a 5.1, 7.1, whatever mix, fucking fine. But please include the original mix, too.
Exactly,
I don't care as long as you give me a choice. You know?
Yeah.
If you don't give me a choice, that's when I'm annoyed.
Well, it leads to a certain subculture of horror fans that like to argue about audio mixes, like on movies like Suspiria.
Yeah.
I have seen like 10-page threads about the 5.1 mix on Suspiria. It's like, watch it in fucking basic stereo. That's how you're supposed to watch it.
Yeah.
You know.
Because the technology wasn't there at the time doesn't mean that the film has suffered all this time.
Right.
You know, far from it.
It's not like Dario Argento is mixing the sound with his sound mixer going, if only I had more channels.
he may have been, though, because his movies do have really great sound design, especially for something that's probably shot without sound.
Yeah.
Mm.
like, if you, I saw Mother of Tears in a theater, and I think it's one of the few new Argentos I've seen in a theater, mercifully. But the sound design was incredible. Like, I finally heard this sound design that I've, you know, always read about that his movies had in the theater, and it, like, it blares at just the right time.
Well, I do have
so
the...
there was some thought.
Yeah, well, I've got the Blu-ray of Suspiria, and it really benefits from the 5.1, so I'm sort of contradicting myself there, but that is one of the few exceptions where that enhances the film. Because it's such, there's a lot of separation in that film, in the actual original soundtrack. But other films like, I don't know, like Halloween, like I was saying, just did not benefit from it at all. But then again, Sean swears by the new 7.1. So I've not heard that one yet, but it will be on the box set I'm getting, the one that John mocks everybody for buying.
Yeah, I'm going to buy it too, so...
Oh, you are going to buy it? Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. Mindless consumer, but
I pre-ordered mine friggin' when it dropped, when they basically announced it, so I don't have shame in saying I'm buying it. Anyway, I hope that sort of answers it for you, Avery. He's also got the last bit here. Horror fandom is detrimental to the continuation of the genre as well. As far as I'm concerned, as was discussed in my favorite episode of MMC, the world of horror fans is ripe with Rupert Pupkin syndrome.
He is right.
Mm-hmm.
He's totally right.
Alright, so thanks for Avery. Much appreciated.
Yeah, Avery,
a lot of thought
put
into that. Well done. Next question is from some guy named Julian Bulk. Oh, it's my brother. I know.
Who the fuck is that?
My brother. Alright. Okay, so case scenario, he says, each member of the MMC is gifted a free trip to any destination in the world, plus expenses paid. The only stipulation is the trip must be movie-connected, i.e. my favourite horror film is Unhinged, he says, so I like to go to Portland, Oregon to see Pittock Mansion, the house used in the movie. Which place would each person like to visit and why?
That's a good question.
Fuck.
It's like, I have to think about that.
I think yours would be like to come to the ABBA, wouldn't it, for Waking Fright?
Right. Actually, it's funny. The ABBA, like, that's a place I never want to go. You know?
Oh, I think you rest assured it doesn't exist, so you'll be okay.
Yeah.
But then again,
even the Outback equivalent, I'd never want to go there.
Hmm. I think Murder by Decree would be probably mine, because I'd like to see all the streets of Whitechapel.
Yeah.
For all the old Jack the Ripper. Yeah. I mean, because I've done stuff like Dilly Plaza in Dallas. I don't know. I don't think that cabin where the Evil Dead was shot exists anymore. Apparently, it's been pulled
down. It's. I think it's been long since 20.
Yeah, it's long gone.
It's outside of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, too.
Oh, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Okay.
Yeah. No, I just remember at college, one of my friends there, she was from Murfreesboro, and I was like, you know, Grey Horror Movie was shot there. They showed it to them, and they all enjoyed it. So,
yeah, I'd say probably that. That's a very good question. It's just I'd probably say yeah, because I really love the film Murder by Decree with Christopher Plummer. I'd say probably the Whitechapel area of London would be the one I'd like to see. What about you, John?
Probably Hong Kong for the. That new territories location where they film the ending of every kung fu film of the 70s. It's like this kind of grassy field that overlooks the islands.
Yeah.
Or it overlooks Hong Kong Bay. Like, the Young Masters finale was shot there. There's like tons of films, lots of Shaw Brothers movies, Golden Harvest films, seasonal films. Everything seems to be filmed in that one location that you actually wonder if, you know, film sets were like fighting over the usage of that area. Yeah, but apparently it's some island in what's called the New Territories or a park or something, but they all film there. I've always wanted to see it. I mean, there's a lot of locations in Hong Kong I would probably recognize right away.
Why, do you watch a lot of Asian movies, do you, John?
Yeah, I do that. It's not well known about me. But in between all the Robin Williams movies I watch, I do.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, okay, there's about 15 listeners gone there. And that's without Garrow on the show as well. And it's once it's John. All right, so Hannah, what did you say?
I want to go to Austin and visit all the locations in Slacker.
Slacker, yeah.
And like remake Slacker with my iPhone. and like redo Slacker because I'm in love with Slacker and Austin. No,
don't knock Austin. Austin's a beautiful place.
No, Austin's great, but it is. Like, there's like this. There was this project recently where they were like remaking Slacker. I was like, you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really setting new boundaries. Did Guillermo del Toro produce it?
No, surprisingly. No, I like to go to Tatooine and visit the moisture farm.
moisture farm?
Gosh.
Actually, I'd like to go to Pandora.
Pandora!
Yeah.
I
can't believe some people actually came out of watching Avatar going that their life won't be the same again. They want to go and live in Pandora. Like, you fucking idiots, really?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day.
You want to live in the land of a DAW paperback cover from the 1970s?
Right.
Ursula Le Guin, the word for the world is forest or some shit.
Yeah.
I want to visit the afterlife in
H-Beam Piper's Fuzzies.
I want to visit the afterlife in Peter Jackson's The Lovely Bones.
Oh, God.
Yes, album covers from wall to wall.
What's his name? Roger Deakin? Is that the name of the artist?
Yeah,
something like that.
Did any of you ever see The Lovely Bones?
Nope.
No, never saw it.
Piece of shit. So bad.
Thanks. You just saved me 2 hours, I guess. All right.
I really don't know. I'm trying to think, like, where would I want to go? Like, the thing that leaps to mind is, like, some of the European locations from spy movies I like.
He wants to go to the Swiss Alps and track down Tula.
Yeah, yeah.
have some fun with that mangina.
Yeah. I just can't, I just love a self-inflicted gash, you know. No.
Looks like that piece you find at the bottom of a fucking Kentucky Fried Chicken barrel that no one knows what the hell it is.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I'm thinking about movies like Purple Noon or The Third Man, To Catch a Thief. You know, I kind of think of those like spy movie locations, sort of exotic Bond movie locations like that. But I don't have a specific movie. Like, you know, I lived in Memphis for a while and it was really cool to see the locations from Mystery Train every day.
Mm.
You know, that was pretty neat.
So it wasn't cool to see the locations from The Firm?
Actually, you know what? I saw The Firm after I lived in Memphis for a while, and it was kind of funny how well they used some areas in Memphis for some action scenes. Didn't really like the movie.
No.
But there's this bit where Tobin Bell's, the guy who played Jigsaw in the Saw movies, is chasing Tom Cruise and using the little fucking gondola thing, and he's running across the bridge on top. And I was like, "Oh man, that's kind of funny." But no, the Mystery Train though had most of it took place at this street corner in Memphis. And while the hotel's gone that they spend a lot of time at there, a lot of those places are still there, and it still kind of has that character. So
that had some records in it, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Before they revamped the tour, because apparently Jim Jarmusch went on the tour and thought it was terrible, and that's why he made fun of it in that movie.
Yeah.
But the tour improved significantly since.
Jim Jarmusch, my dad Lee Marvin didn't like this much either.
Yeah, no, him and the Sons of Lee Marvin did not approve.
All right. Thanks for that, Jules. He's got another one later on that we'll bring up. Okay, let's move on. All right, our friend Super Mexican has got one for us. It took me a while to work out if he's taking the piss or if he's genuinely serious with this. I guess he's taking the piss.
Of course
he is, because it's Super Mexican. What up, Soup? All right. Why should there be any genre apart from comic book movies when they're the best movies ever? Okay, so he really is taking the piss.
Because we're not all 10 years old there.
Yes,
I'm really wondering when comic book movie fatigue is going to set in, because it seems like it's showing no signs of slowing down.
No, it isn't, and I really thought Guardians of the Galaxy would be the end of this nonsense, and it is not.
No, it's if anything, it shows it's more alive than it's ever been.
Yeah,
you know, awesome. Marvel's announcing movies into like 22, 25. You know,
yeah.
it's just insane because you look at the history of cinema and there's always these trends and they tend to come and go, but the comic book movie trend is it will not die.
It won't.
It's outlasted the spy movie trend. It's outlasted so much stuff.
It's outlasted slasher movies. You know, it's just...
It's probably going to outlast a Western because you could literally credit that to 20 years.
Yeah, the Western is like cinema's most enduring genre, you know, but the Western has... It ran out of gas, you know? Yeah. Well, it didn't run out of gas. I think the Western is still a viable genre. It's just, you know, I guess it's not marketable anymore. I guess.
Well, the problem was in the late 60s, early 70s, filmmakers started trying to pander to bring in that youth audience, and they thought the way to do it was to make anti-authoritarian Westerns.
Yeah,
in which you watch a lot of them today, they really do not. You wonder who the hell even liked them back then.
You know what? I kind of wish we had gotten that canon Spider-Man to completely kill off every goddamn comic book movie franchise possible in the future. I'd love to have seen it.
I don't think it would have killed it, because back when that would have been made, comic book movies weren't cool, and that's why Canon would have been making them. It was making them.
That's what I mean. I wish they had completely killed it right off. I mean,
yeah, Michael Dudikoff is Peter Parker.
Dudikoff.
Bob Hoskins is Dr. Octopus.
And Chuck Norris is Uncle Ben.
Great power comes great responsibility, Peter.
He roundhouse kicks the thief. Looks like I don't think I should have to die in this movie.
Yeah.
He shoots him. Uncle Ben's got a mullet, you know, it's like bleeding.
With Peter Parker's love interest, played by Nick Foster.
Vest.
Yeah. Okay. So,
anyways, I know that's not a real question, but.
I can just hear the snickering behind the Lucha Libre mask going, I'm going to ask these gringos this question.
And then he forgot. But he forgot to hit record when he said it.
This will be the worst podcast ever.
Yeah. This is episode 184? I don't know. No, it's actually number 32, soup. No, it's actually it's actually the 184th time you've recorded it, Soup. That's what it is.
Amigos, 237 episodes later.
Yes. Okay, pendejos. I got some couple of gringos with me here. Say hello, Bill. Look at it. Bye. All right. Thanks for that, Super Mexican. And why should there be any genre apart from comic book movies? One of the best movies ever because... Well, you can find all my writings about that over at Rotten Tomatoes under my handle of Mjolnir 1998.
You know how Thor's a woman now? They should have changed Mjolnir's name to Cunt Hammer.
Hey,
that sounds like the best black metal band ever.
Cunt Hammer.
We just lost two listeners.
Is that all?
Shit. I think.
It'll be our game up.
I think if you listen to this show, you've got an iron resolve.
Hey,
you can't be offended.
I need feminism because of the Midnight Movie Cowboys.
We've got all the old Andrew Dice Clay fans.
He's coming out to Melbourne, actually, and I ain't going. Because where he's playing is always about $100 upwards. I'm not paying that
to see a
grizzled old fat man who should have been here 20 years ago. I would have probably paid it then, but not
come
now.
Come on, he'll come out and he'll be like, hey, where's the fucking koala bears?
You guys all right here at Kangaroo Pouches?
Foster's, I fucked it. Ah!
Paul Hogan, I fucked him.
Crocodile fucking Dundee, man. All right, let's move on. Oh, God. I'm going to read off Garrow's, but I'm not answering any of them. I'll answer a couple of them. All right, Garrow, I would like to know. Here we go.
I'd like to know which each of your favorite Paul Hogan movie is and why. But if that's too hard-hitting of a question, oh, God, I'd settle for knowing if the blood of Magic Johnson can truly cure AIDS. I'm not answering that one.
Favorite Paul Hogan movie, Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles.
For me, Crocodile Dundee, because it was the first one.
I'm going to say the Paul Hogan TV show, so there. Up yours, Garrow. all right. Okay, this one is generally, he's generally seriousness on that. Okay, I'd also like to know how Rob Zombie tricks people into being fans of his movie. Is he a hypnotist? Or does he know magic spells to trick people's minds into thinking they're watching a good movie? It's actually a decent question, Gary, even though you're trying to be a smart ass about it.
yeah, it actually is.
How does Rob Zombie trick people into watching his movies when they're piles of shit, I think you're saying?
They hear the song Meet the Creeper, and then they just their brain stops developing.
All right, there seems to be a formula with Rob Zombie films. It's like Milton the Monster. One part clowns, two parts coarse language. What would you say about two parts redneck?
Two parts redneck. Two and a half, at least.
Two and a half, yeah. One part southern rock.
So there's got to be a Skynyrd song in there and a Kiss song and a...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe a Nazareth tune.
Nazareth? I don't know. Yeah, how does he do it? He's like an illusionist, really, that people keep going to buy his shit.
I don't know. I think he was writing that fake nostalgia wave of Grindhouse movies. And people thought, oh, this guy gets 70s movies when really he doesn't.
No.
Yeah.
He is not.
He's really doing 80s movies.
Yeah, yeah.
So all the obnoxious it's just, loudness. They're
80s movies with 70s music. You know, in clothes.
Well, I've constantly posed the question, why does every person in the goddamn Rob Zombie film have to have long hair? I've never worked that out.
Because he does, dude.
He's got long hair.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Even kids, like, have long hair. It's crazy.
I'm surprised Sid Haig wasn't throwing a wig on his head and had long hair in the Devil's Rejects.
Probably look too unrealistic. They go for reality in those movies.
Oh, yeah. Pure realism. That's all it is.
That's why every other word is fuck.
My thing is, I don't think we really had, like, the young generation, the Juggalos and the Hot Topic types, didn't have their own, like, horror name. Like, my generation had Stephen King, Carpenter, or Wes Craven.
Yeah.
But there was nobody you could put above the title of a horror movie to tell you this is... You know, a Herschel Gordon Lewis film. You know, you didn't have a name like that, and Rob Zombie just kind of filled that void because he kind of cashed in. There was a time in the 90s where a lot of people making horror films would insist they were not making horror films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much it became a running gag in Fangoria. It's not a horror film.
Oh, I didn't make a horror movie.
Right.
I just don't. What's an example of that? I'm trying to think.
Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs. It's not a horror movie.
It's not a horror film. It's a psychological thriller.
Oh, psychological thriller. That's the euphemism that they always trotted out.
Yeah.
The first 5 minutes, some inmate throws jizz on Jodie Foster's...
Yeah.
You know, it's a horror film. Come on. And but I think because he kind of had that, he wore that badge of pride about being a horror fan, and I think you had this young crowd that kind of liked that. And I mean, he already had he was bringing over the audience from his music already. And
yeah, he had
The House of a Thousand Corpses, basically, because Universal didn't want to release it for a couple of years and shelved it, and Lionsgate bought it, gave it a notoriety it didn't deserve.
Yeah,
there's this movie. Truth was, it sucked. And you know, it's just, but they had the idea it was too extreme, and he put that word of mouth out there that was too extreme, and it offended everybody at Universal.
And if you want to get horror fans to watch your movie, like, have a studio not release it. Exactly. Then they'll go, oh man, this is the holy grail of horror right here, you know.
It was great publicity, and it was just all those things kind of coming together for him. If you look at the grosses of his films, they don't make that much money.
No, but they really don't. No.
Right, they're cheap, and if they make $20 million, they made, you know, 10 times their money, so because they're probably shot for like $4 or $5 million or whatever.
I will say, go, John.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, once you add in video sales and foreign markets, because this horror stuff sells in the foreign markets real well, especially with like Russia and China probably accepting a lot of this stuff, you know, the money's already made. So, yeah. And he just cultivates that audience. So he's got the name Rob Zombie. Is there a better name for a horror film director?
Yeah. But none of these films.
John Carpenter.
No. Stephen Meat Cleaver. You know, you don't have anybody with that name or anything, so it's like...
The Butcher Brothers.
Right.
Have you noticed, like, in a lot of direct-to-video horror movies, you'll have, like, these people who have these names that they made. Yeah. The Butcher Brothers. The Slasher Sisters. You know?
The Soska Sisters is my favorite, because the name sounds weird, even though it's probably just a normal name.
Yeah.
Yeah. But none of the zombies films out here had made it to the theater post Halloween. Halloween 2 didn't make it, neither did Lords of Salem.
Lords of Salem was barely released here.
Yeah.
I mean, Midnight Movie is kind of like a dumping.
It played in one theater in the DFW area, so.
Really?
Yeah.
But the thing
is, the DFW area is fucking huge.
Oh, yeah. I did find, I will say this, and I've said it before, so I can't go around and bullshit about it. I liked House of a Thousand Corpses. Karen and I went and saw it at the theater when it came, and we had a blast with it. But
great date movie.
We were long past dating.
Could you,
mate.
Could you tell the female leads apart?
Well, it was only Sherry Moon, wasn't there?
No. In House of a Thousand Corpses, the two victims, the two female victims looked exactly alike.
I have to go back and look at that. I can't remember.
Couldn't tell one from the other. Like, I was like, okay, which one is this happening to?
I didn't even know that one of them was Rainn Wilson. I forgot all about that.
Oh, that's right. He was in that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. I haven't seen that movie since I was in college, so.
Yeah. I mean,
the problem is I recognize the Universal backlot all over the film because I've been there, so it's like I recognize, okay, that's where they shot this, so it's like.
Yeah. I mean, I did like that, and I still do like it. I mean, I have to revisit it again. Yeah. And watch it. Devil's Rejects, I was always in, you know, it's okay.
The thing about Devil's Rejects is it's just so relentlessly, like,
stupid.
Hideous.
Yeah.
And there's tons of cursing.
Yeah, way too much, I found.
Well, and, like, it's just such a cruel movie. Like, the killing that country music family and just relentlessly torturing them. It was just so...
Yeah.
Why am I watching this? Yeah. What am I getting out of this? How is this movie benefiting me at all? It just seems to be poison, you know?
I did watch one of his films, and I still say it's the best one, and I had so much fun watching it, to the point where when I finished watching, I said, holy shit, that was a Rob Zombie film. I actually enjoyed it. That was The Haunted World of El Super Bisto. That was fantastic.
Yeah,
that. It was... Trust me, you will piss yourself laughing. It's that funny. It really... It's so far from any other Rob Zombie film, even though it's animated. You walk out and think, holy shit, I really enjoyed that, and that's a Rob Zombie film. He wrote it and directed it.
I don't think you'll catch John watching that anytime soon.
No.
I don't think John will... No, but I mean, I will give props where it's deserved. And yeah, that El Super Bisto was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
I'll tell you what. I'll put it on the shelf after Patch Adams Blu-ray.
incidentally, El Super Bisto is the name of Stewart's penis.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard that. That's a rumor out there.
It's the rumor.
Hey, ladies listening in for Stu, you've been warned.
All right. Then he goes on to say other questions. Did Russell Crowe buy the South City Rabbitohs because... Ruben Dave, the largest amount of homosexual plays in the league. Don't know.
It's a good question, though, Garrow.
Yeah.
Very hard hitting, yes. I'll ask Rusty next time I see him, all right?
So, Garrow took the gloves off.
Yeah. Now that John is a pipe smoker, will he use that pipe to smoke some legal Colorado weed? I don't know. John? Yes or no?
No interest.
Hey, Stuart, ever ridden the pouch of a kangaroo when he was growing up? What was the name of his pet koala? His name was Garrow.
Crackers.
Okay. Yeah.
It was TC.
I thought of another question. This is the last one from Garrow. And there's two more. I thought of another question. Is it true that next year's Rock Month artists will be discussed are G.G. Allin, Body Count, Black Oak, Arkansas, and 1910 Fruit Gum Company?
I think they should be.
I think the answer to that is, well, you'll have to wait till next June to find out.
My answer is no, yes, yes, no.
Right. Last one by Garrow, mercifully. Also, where do babies come from? Okay, you must be a virgin. Okay, that's Garrow out the way.
It's a stork.
It's the stork. There you go. Don't you listen?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like a Tex Avery cartoon.
Okay, a couple of questions from Richard Kuhn. Okay, Richard. Okay, what do you guys think of Prince the Musician? This is interesting. We've got a music question.
I like the early Prince albums, like For You and his debut. And I think up to about 89, he's really good.
Right,
He was the alternative to Michael Jackson for those of us who thought we were too tough to listen to Michael Jackson. He was too. I don't want to sound un-PC on the show, but he seemed a bit gay to us in the 80s.
All right.
Yes, we did exist.
whereas Prince was singing about like chicks masturbating with magazines and you know.
Well, God,
Raspberry
had
Parade, you know,
Vanity and Apollonia had all these hot chicks around him.
Yeah, so I know. It was always like. Prince songs were always about like sex, like Pussy Control.
And Michael Jackson had Corey, like the two Coreys hanging around him,
and Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, it was just weird. And it's like Prince is hanging out with Sheena Easton and Sheila E. And it's like he's got it going on. It's
yeah,
like,
lots of smoking hot. Like you know, Prince is the reason we have those parental advisory labels because his songs were just too sexy. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really scared Tipper Gore.
I thought Prince was a decent musician, but I never liked his music. Sorry, Richard.
I've never listened to much Prince. I remember in college, a friend brought a live DVD of his over to my dorm room and popped it in, and I thought it was rocking. I was like, whoa, this is great, but really? I haven't listened to much outside of that. Yeah.
All right. I do like the Batman soundtrack he did, though. I really do.
Unpopular opinion.
there's a great tune on there called Lemon Crush. It's fantastic.
Okay. No, I liked Bat Dance. I really enjoyed that one. Because when they first announced that Prince was doing the alternate soundtrack to that Batman, I'm like, oh, no. Are you kidding me? And then when I saw the movie in the drive-in when it came out, I'm like, oh, I'm digging these songs. Half decent. So, yeah, I think that's the only soundtrack, or the only bit of music I actually own of Prince's. I don't even have a best of it. I know Richard's a big Prince fan, so I'm trying to be very cautious and not say I can't stand him, but he's not my type. But you guys know I love my rock anyway. Like, I like.
What do you guys think of Purple Rain?
I've never seen it.
I've never seen it either.
No.
I don't think I've seen the whole film in one sitting. You see bits and pieces on cable. And it's interesting. I got the DVD here at the house. Eventually, I got to sit down and watch it.
Yeah. No, I've never, just never really watched it. Didn't he have one called Under the Cherry Moon? Was that a film as well, or was that a live show?
That was a movie he did in black and white, and he did it like a screwball comedy, romance or something. I've never seen it. It was infamously hated when it was released, because Purple Rain was very popular in the States, and Under the Cherry Moon was like an unbelievable bomb, and Warner Brothers went wide with it too. Like, it opened everywhere.
Is it like Prince's version of Woody Allen's Manhattan or something? Is it?
Some of the clips I've seen would have you thinking that, but it looks almost like it was improvised, because it's like Jerome from Purple Rain, who was like the assistant to Morris Day in the time. He was like the comedy guy. He's basically now Prince's sidekick, based on the clip I've seen, and it just seemed weird. Like, the clip I watched just had no. Yeah, it was like watching one of these movies where you don't know how the hell it got released. It just doesn't seem finished, you know?
Hey, John,
it actually, instead of Manhattan, it sounds more like Norman Mailer's Wild 90 or something.
Yeah, it reminds me of Tough Guys Don't Dance, the one Norman Mailer movie I've seen.
Oh, gosh. You should see some of his other movies, like Maidstone. Fucking weird.
I don't even know how they got made. It's crazy.
It's just Norman Mailer had a camera and a crew, and they're just doing stuff.
That's what Under the Cherry Moon had me thinking, but I haven't seen the entire film. So,
like in Maidstone, there's a scene where, infamously, Rip Torn got loaded and smacked Norman Mailer in the head with a hammer.
Good. Yeah. I love Rip Torn more than ever.
No, dude, it's all in the movie. Like, into this nasty fight. Like, they're both bleeding. And Rip Torn is loaded off his ass, just going, I have to destroy you, Norman. if you look it up on YouTube, just look up Maidstone on YouTube, it'll pop right up. It's amazing.
I remember Norman Mailer having these weird appearances on Fox News. He would appear on Hannity.
Oh, I saw some of those. Yes.
Just like, oh, there's a great hero. There's a great literary hero as a foil for Sean Hannity. Yeah, Norman, why do you hate this country?
Yeah.
Well, hey, John, can you cast your mind back to the 80s? What was the bigger critical flop? Was it Under the Cherry Moon, or was it Moonwalker?
Critical flop, I would say Under the Cherry Moon, because it was a backlash against the success of Purple Rain, which actually did get a lot of critical acclaim.
Right.
And was a popular film. And so Under the Cherry Moon seemed to have this very spiteful backlash. I don't remember any reviews for Moonwalker. I don't remember anything about it.
Moonwalker, I think, was probably what people expected it to be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that was considered a disappointment. And Michael Jackson was very unprolific, as in you'd get an album every 6 years, and he just seemed to be in hiding and being weird, and he was fodder for tabloids. And while Prince was putting out an album seemingly every year, and you'd at least get like two solid songs on it if you were a fan of his music.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Richard's got another one. Which is... I need to find the bastard. I just lost it.
It's do you think Dario Argento has become a trick-ass bitch?
Yeah, there you go.
Years ago he did.
And we've talked about this on the show, too, that Dario Argento just, like, somewhere around Stendhal syndrome, he just stopped giving a shit.
Yeah. quit caring.
And like, it's like Italian films lost all their charm at some point. Like, Italian genre films, anyway. Like
mid-80s, I'd say.
Like, the horror, Italian horror films used to have this, like, mystique and charm. And then, like, if you watch Argento's recent horror movies, they're like, they look like TV movies. They just have no character, no charm, no nothing. It's like, but yet he's still able to get, like, actors in them, and you wonder why.
Well, they all want to work with him.
Yeah, but on, like, he hasn't made a good movie in so long, you know?
Just to say they worked with him.
Yeah, it's I guess it's like doing a Woody Allen movie. You
yeah,
know?
It is. He's like the Woody Allen of horror.
He is.
I, for one, have barely seen any Argentos. I mean, I think the last one I saw of his, that was, Inferno.
I love Inferno.
It's probably the last one after that. I never really just caught on to his stuff. I just never really...
Well, the thing about Argento is I have friends that love Argento, and I have friends that fucking hate Argento.
All I hear is just bad review after bad review of every new movie he's
And I'm talking about even his classic stuff. Like, right. And I think with Argento, his movies are pure mood and style.
Yeah.
And if you don't respond to that, you're not going to respond to them. If you want a tight script, you ain't going to get it.
No.
You know, like, my friends who hate Argento are big screenwriting junkies.
Yeah.
Like,
they go by the Sid Field rules.
Yeah, they love screenwriting. They love studying screenwriting. They love, you know, Sid Field and all those people. And so when they see an Argento movie, their head explodes because it just doesn't follow any rules. And, you know, and I wouldn't say like that in that it's like some, it's like great and rebellious. It's just Argento doesn't care about the story. He's interested in the mood. He was interested in the atmosphere. And he was interested in showing you an insanely staged scene of somebody, a beautiful chick getting murdered, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll have that answer for you. Richard, cheers for those, mate. All right, so let's move on. Gentleman by the name of Matt Dusing. Relative, Hunter?
Familiar.
Not related to me.
Not related to you, okay.
It's funny, but he's from Illinois, and the Dusings are from, like, when they emigrated to America, they moved to Missouri and Illinois. So there is probably a relation there, but it's distant.
He's not a cousin?
No.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, we did not meet through family. We met on the internet.
Oh, nice. All right. Matt?
He's a great dude. I've hung out with him before. We hung out in Chicago when I went there to see Iron Maiden. He's a great guy.
Go to Chicago to watch Iron Maiden. I think it's the best quote I've heard all day. I went to Chicago to watch Iron Maiden.
But if you look at him, though, you can kind of see a resemblance a little bit. And
all right. Anyway, Matt asks us, what's your favorite Emilio Estevez movie?
Well, I can tell you, as far as an actor, Emilio the actor, Repo Man. Emilio the director, The Way, starring Martin Sheen.
I would say Repo Man.
Okay.
Repo Man is the godfather of punk rock movies.
I haven't seen The Way. Is it worth buying?
I love it.
Okay.
I absolutely love it. It's a very, you know, it's sort of a, you know, almost like a religious journey movie, but it was just so refreshing because it didn't have any of the cynicism you see in today's movies. It was very sincere. And it actually, okay, to go back to Julian's question, if I was going to do location movie, I'd do The Way. Because it's about this, you know, these people go on this pilgrimage where they walk this thing called the Camino through Europe, and it goes from, like, France to end of Portugal,
right?
And it's this thing you walk, and in the movie Emilio Estevez directed it, and he plays this guy who goes on this pilgrimage the way on the Camino, and he dies while he's out there, and his estranged father goes there to collect his remains, and he decides to go take the journey, and it's a really good movie. It kind of came and went in the theater. Critics kind of yawned at it, but I thought it was really, really good. And I watched it with my parents, and they loved it. And I watched it with my grandmother. They watched it with my grandmother, and she hates everything, hates movies. And she was watching it, and she wasn't saying anything. And my parents were thinking, oh, she hates it. you know. And then when it was over, she turned to them and goes, well, that was a really good movie. And they were like, whoa.
Hey, is this the same grandmother who saw Kiss in the lobby?
No, no, that's my dad's parents.
All right. All right, I'm going to say my favorite, I'm probably going to get kicked in the ass, but this is Free Jack. I really enjoy Free Jack.
Nice.
Yeah, never saw it.
Saw it in the theater when it came out. It's got Emilio Estevez, Rene Russo, Mick Jagger, and our friend John David Johansen is in it.
Didn't Michael Tolkien write that?
Possibly. Yeah, yeah, possibly. I like that, and my other one, and I've seen this from probably about 10 times, is National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon. It's a pisser of a movie, that one.
I like the opening of Loaded Weapon, just because they have the typical shootout at a convenience store.
Yeah.
And the place is completely destroyed, and Amelia's just going, don't thank me, you know, just doing my duty. And the guy's like, my store! My livelihood, it's gone!
That's a funny movie there. There's another one he did as well, which, Young Guns 2 I really like as well. But there's one he did with Charlie Sheen called Rated X, which is a made-for-TV film, which is really good, based on the old Mitchell Brothers from the 70s.
Right.
Who founded the, what's the name of that theater, John? They ran San Francisco.
O'Farrell Theater.
O'Farrell Theater, that's the one, yeah.
Yeah,
and then the ones that did Behind the Green Door and, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, whatever those films are. So yeah, that was a good one he did as well, because that's an interesting story about the Mitchell Brothers. What happened? How one of them killed Artie? One of them killed Artie. The brother killed Artie Mitchell. It was a good watch, good movie. Him and Charlie Sheen do together. But that's that one. All right, thanks.
Looked it up, and Michael Tolkien did not write Free Jack. It was Ronald Shusett who wrote Alien and Stephen Pressfield.
Okay, there you go. All right.
Same guys who wrote Above the Law.
Yeah. Stephen Pressfield's the guy who wrote Legend of Bagger Vance, and he wrote this great book called The War of Art. If you ever...
Everybody talks about that book. Everybody recommends that book.
Oh, it's great. I highly recommend it. I have it sitting right in front of me right now, actually.
Right.
All right, well, that's that. Thanks, Matt, for that one. Okay. Oh, God. Guess who sent us one, Hunter? Farmer.
Andrew Farmer.
What up, Farmer?
We need to get him back on the show. He's moving to Dallas.
Fuck like yes. It's been way too long since we've had Andy on.
And, I know.
All right. Andrew wants to know, what's the best Hammer film? Good question. Seems it's so bloody...
I want to know John's answer to that.
Oh, mine first? Brides of Dracula.
Nice.
Okay.
Just excellent. Probably the best vampire movie ever made.
I will say, for me, it's a tie. No, actually, I'm going to say I really like the original Dracula from 1958 with Christopher Lee,
Terror of Dracula or Horror of Dracula?
Horror of Dracula.
I think it was just... it was only just called Dracula in elsewhere. Of course, America has to rebrand it, don't they? But, you know. My favorite, actually, is Rasputin the Mad Monk. I mean, it's a great movie.
I like
movie.
That one. That's a fun one.
That is so good.
I expected John to say Seven Golden Vampires or something.
No, that was decent. It's fun, but it's not my favorite. It's like, I actually was in the Hammer films long before Shaw Brothers movies, so...
And I will say,
when I was a kid.
There's one out there worth checking out. It's not the best one, but it actually is very, very good. One called Hands of the Ripper from 70... Okay. 2, I think, or 73, and that was a good one as well. So yeah, there's that.
My favorite's probably Devil Rides Out.
Okay,
really?
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
It's pretty decent,
and it was kind of a different role for Christopher Lee.
Yeah,
but you know,
by the way, I should say, another Hammer film I really like that's underappreciated. Most people don't realize it's Hammer is Hound of the Baskervilles with Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that just got a Blu-ray release here the other day.
Oh, they wouldn't even dare release it on Blu-ray here.
You know which one
really?
I've always wanted.
I'm going to JB Hi-Fi, I guess.
I think you will be. I think it's part of the 2 for $20 sale or something as well. It's like dirt cheap.
Jeez.
You know which one I've always wanted to see and never gotten to see are the Quatermass movies.
They're excellent.
Yeah, I remember John talking about them, yeah.
Oh, you know what? I take that back. My favorite Hammer movie is Paranoiac with Oliver Reed. That's my favorite.
I still haven't watched that.
That movie rocks.
That's my favorite Oliver Reed film. The werewolf one he did in 62, whatever it is.
Curse of the Werewolf?
Curse of the Werewolf, yeah.
I've got that one, yeah.
Curse of the Drunken Werewolf.
Oliver Reed is clearly like wasted during Paranoiac, but it adds to the movie.
He's wasted everything he made.
Yeah. I watched Tommy the Who, and I was just, you could just see the booze coming out of Oliver Reed's pores on the Blu-ray.
Oh gosh, watch the Three Musketeers. He's like stumbling around through everything. But I was thinking when Stu was talking about how America called it Horror of Dracula, I think the reason was Universal was still re-releasing Dracula in the theaters, I think, in the 50s.
Ah, okay. Makes sense.
So they had to just... And Warner Brothers had to make it distinguishable from the Universal stuff. And
they retitled Frankenstein, too, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Curse of Frankenstein.
That was the first Hammer movie I ever saw. I saw it on TV.
Because Universal hadn't dumped all those on television in the 50s at the time, and I think they were still running them as matinee films and stuff in theaters for kids.
So is this the one you told me about, John Hanley, the Baskervilles, from 1959?
Yeah.
With
Terrence Fisher.
Peter Cushing?
Yes.
Yeah, someone's on Blu-ray here. Part of the...
Wow, you guys get a Blu-ray.
Yeah, buy two, get one free. So it'll come down to about $10 in the end.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yes. So, all right. That's that. Thanks, Andy. Okay. Barolo Garvey. Not his real name. We know who it is, Hunter, don't we?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Anyway,
oh, buddy. What did he say?
What does Hunter have against Diablo Cody? This is one for you to answer.
Where did he say this? I can't find it.
It's there. Don't worry. Because Farmer said the same thing. He wants to know the same thing. What have you got against Diablo Cody?
She sucks.
God. You could expand a bit more on that. She sucks.
Actually, you know what I will say, though? I liked Young Adult, last movie. I thought it was actually pretty good.
Okay.
I hated Juno. I hated Jennifer's Body. But Young Adult, I thought, actually showed some interesting...
Juno...
What?
Joel Barlow!
Oh, remember, God.
Remember that? Fuck, that was years ago, that was.
Dude, that's going back, man.
Yeah. I should ask permission from Joe to snatch that bit and stick it at the end of the show. It's hysterical.
Oh, my gosh.
Just Hunter screaming about Juno.
It's funny. The show opens with that, and everybody was complaining that I blew up their eardrums.
Oh, it was fucking hysterical. It was one of the funniest things I heard.
Joel Barlow! This is Space Coyote from Memphis, Tennessee! You, Joel Barlow, have committed the sin of liking the film Juno! Therefore, everything you say is dishwater! I am now going to the internet to spread misinformation and venom on internet message boards in order to sully your reputation and good name! You have messed with forces beyond your control, Joe Barlow! And how you suffer the consequences! Good day to you, sir! And have a Merry Easter!
But yeah, what does Hunter... Okay, yeah, I see it now. What does Hunter have against Diablo Cody? I thought she was incredibly overrated when Juno came out. She was winning all these awards, and I just did not understand what people were seeing. She was just, you know... But I haven't really ranted about her in a long time because I saw Young Adult and went, oh, okay, I like that quite a bit more. I didn't think it was a great movie, but I thought it was an interesting film. So
okay. All right. We've got another one here that was posted to me from Gary Timmons. What up, Gary? If the MMC crew were the stars of a horror film, what kind of horror film would it be? Oh, this, I want to hear John's answer to this. This is going to be good. Not a Rob Zombie film, let's say that much.
If we were the stars of a horror movie?
Yeah, what kind of horror film would it be? Well, I think it's horror film's a horror film, isn't it? I guess he's probably thinking like
Monster Squad or something.
It's a good point, actually.
I see it as a Quatermass film from Hammer in the 50s. with us going, yes, we believe this threat is unknown, you know, just constantly running around in Jeeps trying to warn people that there's something, there's some alien life force that's about to attack London.
It would be like a Halloween 3 season of The Witch.
Kind of.
Which they probably would us as the...
At a quarter mass.
It'd, yeah, be just, exactly. It'd just be us as that part played by, what's his name, that old guy? Dan O'Hurley part.
Dan O'Hurley.
That'd be us.
Actually,
just John be a bunch
would
of
be the Dan O'Hurley role.
Yeah. All you kids will die at 9 p.m. Put on the mask.
Stuart would be Tom Atkins, and I'd just be the guy in the suit walking around.
The robot.
You could be the guy. You could be the guy at the hotel dressed up just like Henry Fonda and on Golden Pond.
Yeah, that's me.
Annoying movie reference that got on my nerves when I was 10.
Yeah, that's. I think it'd be about the Halloween 3 season of The Witch would be us. As long as I can get me some Stacey Nelken and Jamie Lee Curtis action, I'm happy. I'll be in any part. I don't even
but really,
sure.
Like, that is the most perfect part for John is the Dan O'Hurley role.
It really is.
Yeah, I always want to be the old man trying to scare everybody. So.
They have desecrated the idea of Halloween.
John, because if anybody would come up with the final solution for those kids, it would be John.
I've always hated that film. I
love it.
It has this incredible comeback.
Oh, I love
it's an outstanding movie.
I wanted some Michael Myers.
Everybody, you know what? I remember hearing that radio spot when it came out in '82 in the car and with mum and dad, my brother, and thinking, man, Season of the Witch sounds awesome. What a title. And I wanted to go and see it, but I think it would have freaked me out if I had gone to actually watch it. But
it's snakes coming out of your eyes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I don't think I've ever watched that film and said, this sucked. There was no Michael Myers. I think I always took it for what it was.
I had always heard, like, oh, Season of the Witch, that's the one you shouldn't see because it sucks. And I ended up watching it, and I went, well, I like this a lot more than a bunch of the sequels.
I think all this. I think all the sequels suck because they had no purpose for existing. I think the story's told in the first movie, and that's all you need.
You're kind of right, but, I mean, I do like Halloween 2 for all its faults that it's got. It's got numerous faults.
It's got a ton of them. Ugh.
Halloween 2 is not a good movie. But for some reason, I enjoy watching it at Halloween.
I think that's the first horror film shot like an action movie, in my eyes.
Yeah, I mean, Halloween 2 it has more in common with The Terminator than it does with the first Halloween.
Well, it's like he's, he's pretty much played by one stuntman through the whole film. And
it's
actually,
Dick Warlock.
Dick Warlock,
yeah. Dick Warlock, and like something like four different actors played Myers in the first Halloween film.
Yeah, it was... There was one guy who was like the face.
Nick Castle, Tommy Lee Wallace.
Yeah, Nick Castle and Tommy Lee Wallace.
Aaron Moran's brother plays him when the mask falls off, which Ronan Rowe told me was swiped out of one of the Hammer movies. Like, that was a total Carpenter swipe from Hammer.
Really?
Because Carpenter looked. And because I asked him, I said, why did they have the scene where his mask is revealed? Like, what does it matter if we even see his face? And he said, well, he says Carpenter likes some scene in Horror of Dracula or I think it was The Mummy or one of the Frankenstein movies where he pulled the mask off from bandages and was revealed and he had like a scar face and he wanted to duplicate that.
Oh, that was Curse of Frankenstein, wasn't it?
I think it was Curse of Frankenstein. He said he wanted to duplicate that shot so for some reason Myers has this weird eye or whatever, like he's
yeah.
sweat. Like, it's just a weird look. He was just imitating that shot. That's all it was.
Well, I think that they sort of can justify that by her sticking the coat hanger in the eye. That's why it's like that.
Yeah, but, yeah. It was his eye was poked.
But the coat hanger bit actually is there only to, you know, sort of marry up to that part of the eye being odd looking, you know?
Right.
That's the only reason why
it's the thing is, it's like, why wasn't it just Tommy Lee Wallace or Nick Castle? Why did it have to bring in poor Tony Moran?
Well, apparently, because
$50 to do the scene.
No, apparently Nick Castle was too goofy looking. That's why to actually they wanted like a young looking guy. But when you see Nick Castle, or when you see at the start when he escapes from Smith's Grove, mm-hmm. and he jumps on the car, you can tell it's a completely different guy. It looks like Andrew Dice Clay jumping on the car actually. If you slow it down. It's like, hey, take this fucking vehicle, get out of the car, bitch.
Supposedly, I think they said somebody was like, Tommy Lee Wallace is actually doing a lot of the Michael Myers gags that Nick Castle is given credit for. Something like that.
This, you and know, Dean, we need Greg here for this because he knows his shit backwards. He knows.
And supposedly
what.
Dean Cundey came up with a lot of the gags too, like certain shots and everything. But eventually we'll have to try to pull Ronan out of his hiding place. And
oh, that would be an amazing episode getting him on for that. I'll tell you.
Yeah, he's dug up a lot, so.
Yeah.
Tell him to buy a fucking computer and a microphone. You know?
He's got one, but, you know.
He doesn't know how to switch it on.
Dr. David Jeremiah, it's called it the Tool of the Devil, so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. All right, so that's that one there. Thanks, Gary. Appreciate that. And got one more from my brother. What is your favorite movie soundtrack or score of all time and why?
Guardians of the Galaxy! It used 70s tunes.
It made Star-Lord feel human.
His tape never warped over the years.
I honestly don't know. It would be a toss-up between Halloween. Not so much Psycho these days. I've heard that to death. It was just kind of over that. The soundtrack to Can't Stop the Music. I still do listen to that quite a bit. Boy, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of something.
I'm going to say any Goblin soundtrack, you know, like Suspiria, Deep Red, all that stuff. I love it. Can't get enough of those, of that.
Planet of the Apes, the original one as well, is very good.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
That is good. For me, mine's pretty predictable. Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Oh, yeah. Any Morricone is also, you know.
Tied with Violent City, the Ennio Morricone score for the Charles Bronson, Sergio Salima movie.
I haven't seen that. I need to see
it. It's a fantastic score for a great film that gets better every time I watch it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I need to, yeah, any Morricone, any Goblin, just like, God, the Italians just really... They know their shit when it came to their soundtracks during that time. Like, even lesser Italian movies had great soundtracks, like New York Ripper, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though I wouldn't call that a lesser one, New York Ripper is probably Fulci's best movie, if you ask me.
No, man, it's the Beyond.
I'm that sorry.
That's the horror Ripper, master at work.
I thought New York Ripper was way more disturbing than the Beyond.
My favorite's House by the Cemetery.
That's a good one.
I asked about
lunch breaks where they shot some of it.
I actually asked about which one was better, Beyond or House by the Cemetery, because of my part of my two for, buy two get one free deal with JB. I've already got two lined up, but I'm looking for a third, and they're both included in the deal. But I got to pick one. I can't pick both. And I thought, oh, well, I wouldn't mind some Fulci, but which one do I go for? Beyond or House by the Cemetery? But I actually might go for Hound of the Baskervilles now instead.
Yeah,
yeah, just go for that.
Yeah.
You know what other soundtrack's great? Carburetors, man. That's what life's all about.
The hell is that?
Phantom of the Paradise.
Oh, yeah. That's... I never got the huge appeal of that film. I just never liked it.
I don't know.
It.
I watched it the other day, and I just had a blast watching it again. I was like, oh my gosh. I forgot how amusing this movie is. And just all the sort of... all the genres of rock music it goes through like 50s, you know, teen death rock to like Beach Boys surf rock to like sort of shock rock metal with Kiss and stuff. It's just such a blast to watch. But that's kind of a musical. I don't know,
but it's also got Paul Williams.
Paul fucking Williams,
the diminutive little fellow Paul Williams.
Yeah, he's little Paul Williams.
Yeah, all right. So, yeah, that's basically about it. That's the questions we've been fielded. All right, well, that's it for this episode. Thanks to all those who sent the questions in. We'll probably do another one of these in the future, most likely.
Yeah, we should do this anytime we don't have an idea for a show the last minute.
Yeah. This was actually John's idea, so we've got to give props to John for... because we were scrambling, thinking, oh, we're going to do this week. But, yeah, this is
the umpteenth last-minute crazy idea I've had for this is not the first one.
Having said that, we do have a couple of episodes mapped out for the next 2 weeks, so we do actually have some sort of course that we know we're heading along. So anyway, we're going to give a few shout-outs to some podcasts that we dig out there. So Yeah, let's get into it. I gotta give a shout out to the Land of the Creep fellas.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, not fellas. Guys and gal out there, go check them out. LandoftheCreeps.com for all your horror goodness. Sean really talked about Mad Max episode on their last one that they just released. Him and Dr. Shock. So, yeah.
We need to have both of those guys back on. We need to have all those guys back on.
Right? Absolutely.
Dr. Shock, all of them. We need to have them all back soon.
Yeah. I actually got invited to go there next week.
Nice.
Yeah, to do Wolf Creek 1 and 2. So.
Fuck yes!
Not that
you
I've
need
seen-
to talk about how you do bear somewhat of a resemblance to John Jarrett, you know.
Possibly. He and I
just remember
same.
Watching Wolf Creek and going, this guy looks like a cartoon version of Stu.
Looks like a less scary version of me, I should say.
If I had seen Wolf Creek before I met Stu, I would have shit my pants when I met him.
I told you guys need to watch Heathens. Wolf Creek ain't shit compared to Heathens.
I'm going to watch Heathens soon.
Yeah, well, it's up to
you. And then listen to the new Ozboy Nation episode.
Yeah, all right. No worries. All right. Hey, speaking of that, it's a good segue. New Ozboy Nation is out. Just a side thing I did with Rob when he was over at my house one night. We talked about Heathens. And, yeah, be warned, don't play that one at work. It is very heavy on the language. So, it is very funny. And don't watch the video at work as well, because I'm guaranteeing you will get fired. Because remember, this is Melbourne we're talking about. And Australia. Yeah.
It's like the Wild West.
Oh, it's nothing compared to the Wild West. It's way more than that. So, Land of the Creeps, Terror Troop. I want to give them a yell out. Shout out, whatever you want to call it. And my words mix up because this prick neighbor next door is working again in his fucking house. Yep, go over there, terrortroop.com, Boss Butcher. My mate Dan of the Dead over there, Willis, Lizzie, Kelly is over there, Killbot. A whole bunch of others as well. Good show, weekly show, need to check it out. Music. I want to give a yell out to Decibel Geek Podcast, Chris and Aaron over there. That show's another one that's weekly as well. They do just hard rock and metal, and it is awesome. It's one I've got to listen to every week. So get them over at, decibelgeek.com.
They're on Facebook. I've been commenting on their posts on Facebook.
Yeah. I'm friends with both Chris and Aaron on there. I had a couple of interactions there, but more so with Chris. He's a good guy as well. And they are very Kiss-centric at times. If you like Kiss, you're going to love Kiss. You're going to love Decibel Geek, I should say. But they just do other things. Did you see they did an Anthrax discussion, two-parter, Hunter?
No, I need to go listen to that.
Go listen to it. It's actually very good. They split it up into the Belladonna years and the John Bush years as well. I've got some good music from Decibel Geek as well. So go listen to them. Another one as well I'm going to give a shout-out to. John's going to give me shit. Is one called Podkist. P-O-D-K-I-S-S-T. Shut up. It's actually an old Kiss podcast. You're thinking, okay, Stuart, you're bipolar. Why are you listening to a Kiss podcast when you rag on Kiss? Okay, why I rag on Kiss is because I don't like their current status of how they are now.
But you like classic Kiss.
Yeah, of course. I'm not going to make any bones about that. While I've grown indifferent to their early albums, for the most part, from the 70s, like Love Gun I don't like and Rock and Roll Over I don't like, but... Podkist, Ken and the guys over there actually do a very good job, and they're very funny as well, so they are worth checking out. You fellas, what do you got?
Well, we want to mention our friends at the Chromecast.
Oh yeah, I heard one of their episodes not long ago. I heard Conan the Barbarian one, reviewed the film.
Yeah, it's a very good podcast if you like weird fiction, Robert E. Howard, all that good stuff. I was thinking we should have them on to talk about The Whole Wide World. Might be an interesting... Yeah. I thought that would be fun, the Robert E. Howard, Renee Zellweger movie.
Yeah.
And also Slycast as well.
Ah, yes. Mr. Craig Cohen and the two Jeffs. Yeah, definitely check them out. They are hitting home runs over there. And worth checking out for sure. I mean, I've never seen such a in-depth podcast on one actor in my life. It's just... staggering how much they find out about Stallone and cover every facet of his acting career. It's just It's good. They got a good dynamic as well.
I should try to get Frank on sometime.
Frank Stallone. I actually followed him on Twitter for about 2 days. I thought, nah, he's just a flag-waving jerk. I unfollowed him. Seriously.
His appearances on Corolla are great.
Yeah, okay. No worries then. John, you got any? Nah, I don't listen to nobody.
Gotta give a shout-out to Super Mexican.
Yeah.
Jesus. Super. Yes, he'd definitely give us a berating if we didn't give a Super Mexican a blast. Mm-hmm. A shout-out, I should say. We've already given Super enough shit today as it is on the show. Yeah. I'll give him one more. I think I forgot to hit the record button. Oh, we're going to have to do it all over again.
All right, Defend Wall Street, where can they find you?
Okay, Matt, where can I find you? We got the one guy from New Jersey, and one from St. Louis. No, where's Matt from? Not St. Louis, from Louisiana.
Louisiana, yeah.
Oh, God. All right, yeah, but definitely Super Mexican, a must. That's my Friday night.
Here's how
feast.
You know Super Mexican is a great podcast. In their promo that we play on our show, they mentioned Saint RPH references Billy Beer. Okay,
what the hell's that?
Exactly, it's President Jimmy Carter, his brother Billy Carter, who was kind of the black sheep fuck up of the family. Not that Jimmy Carter.
I was going to say, compared to Jimmy Carter, really?
Yeah, I know. Like, but at least Jimmy Carter managed to become president. Like, Billy Carter was like, you know, he was the full blown redneck version of Jimmy Carter that was Jimmy was hiding. Billy Carter, like, you know, legend has it he smoked weed with Willie Nelson in the White House, but he started his own brand of beer called Billy Beer. Yeah, so. And Saint RPH references it in the Super Mexican promo, and I die laughing whenever he brings it up.
But for all the jokes we make about Super Mexican, I mean, they are wicked smart, those guys.
They're
over there.
Really smart,
Jesus,
really funny.
It's frightening how intelligent they are, to the point where I get lost sometimes listening, going, okay, this is way over my head.
Well, and it's so steeped in American politics.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
That, you know, it's a lot of stuff you probably aren't hearing across the pond.
But they do bring it, like, they bring it around to the point where I can actually understand it. It's not so overpowered.
Right, it's not impenetrable. It's not like you're watching C-SPAN. You know, it's still funny.
It was funny when they were talking, when Bill was talking a few weeks back, and he was talking about something. He was really making sense to what he was saying, and he goes, I know I'm drunk, but I'm right, right?
Yeah. And then the show will eventually devolve into Star Wars and Simpsons references, you know.
Oh, they haven't done that for a while, actually.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's
quite
it's
a
been
bit.
A while.
Yeah. They actually had Leslie, L.A. Dowd, on there quite a bit recently.
Right. Yeah, we're going to get her on the show at some point.
I've already got a show idea for her. I've already pitched it to her, and she's interested. I haven't told her the title of the movie, though.
Hey, we want you on the show. We've got an idea, but we're not telling you what the hell the film is yet.
Behind the Green Door.
She's up for it, though. Like, I think it'll be a great show because nobody's ever reviewed this movie anywhere.
Oh, let me guess. It's Shaolin and Tiger Crane, right?
No! It's a documentary. We're going political documentary.
Oh, political?
No idea. It's going to be Shaolin versus Yama.
Oh, okay, then. All right. Oh, well, that's it for this week. Thank you to everybody who posted questions. Like I said, we are going to do this again sometime down the track. Whenever it crops up, you can point your finger at us and say, haha, you don't know what the hell you're doing this week. But, yeah, that's it. All right, sign off.
Adios.
Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions,
go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.